It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into Extra Innings here on the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond along with Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, dude?
What's going on, man?
And we also have Bubba Rosenbaum. Hey, what's happening, Bubba?
Hey, guys. Hope y'all are doing well.
Well, we certainly are. Want to ask you out of the gate. We got lots to talk about, by the way, folks. And we're going to get to ECU baseball in just a little bit. We'll have Corey Glore, play-by-play voice of the ECU baseball team. He'll be joining us in a little while right now. But inquiring minds want to know.
Put a pretty bow on the season.
That's right. We are. It's been a couple days. Still hard to talk about, but we'll be talking about it just a little bit. I got to ask both of you before we move on to baseball and sports. Kyle, before we started this podcast, we were talking about horror movies and favorite horror characters. Do you have one, Kyle?
Yeah, Michael Myers, by far. When I was 8 or 9 years old, it was around the time of 1988, Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, and I was the same age. I think the character of Daniel Harris played the character of Jamie Lloyd. Halloween 4 and 5, and she was like a year or two older than me, so I could identify with her as a character. And okay. I love Dr. Loomis, trying to catch Michael Myers. So, yeah, Michael Myers by far.
I think Michael Myers for me, too, because I thought Freddy was really funny, and I love Nightmare on Elm Street. Like,
he wasn't in the first one. He got funny in the sequels.
Right.
But the first one, he was more serious.
But, it's cool. I love the makeup and all they put on Robert Englund. I love the movies itself, but as far as like scaring the daylights out of me, it would definitely have to be Michael Myers. If I saw Michael Myers in like real life, it would scare the daylights out of me. Bubba, who's your favorite character? Do you have are you a Halloween or are you a horror movie fan?
I'm really not anti-horror movie, but no, I mean, I don't really have a favorite character. I guess you could say, I like Scream.
Okay.
Scream. You're going to go with the Scream Ghost. Even though he wasn't a ghost, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
The Scream
I ghost. Guess kind of when I think of a scary
ghost
movie,
face.
I kind of think of the costume
that's,
that they wore in Scream.
It's called Ghostface. That's the name of the character. Ghost
okay.
Face.
I cannot remember that, but yeah. Okay, I know.
I just had it.
Several Christmases ago, I was going to say that Stacy and I came across Scream was on TV after we put the kids to bed.
On Christmas?
It seems like it was Christmas, but
weird.
Yeah. That's not a Christmas tradition in our house. But we were just flipping around the channels and that was on, so we started watching a little bit of it, and Stacy was getting pissed off at me because I started saying, "Well, what's your favorite scary movie, Stacy?" In the voice. So,
what's your favorite scary movie? I said, "What's your favorite scary movie, Stacy?"
Yeah,
I haven't thought about that in a number of years. Well, and I guess you're watching Christmas movies and the Halloween, Bubba.
Like say that again.
Scrooge, or did you watch?
You watch Christmas movies at Halloween?
Oh
like
yeah,
Grant,
yeah.
Scrooge.
Christmas Vacation's my favorite movie to watch in October.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Well, that's about the time they start showing it.
and The Christmas Story, right? 5,000
yeah,
times in a row.
Pretty much. Well, sorry. I love
thank God I love that movie. Anyway, so speaking of horror movies and horror, I'm making a segue here, guys. Louisville was definitely a horror movie. Definitely very scary. And 26 runs scored in the two games. For Louisville, one run, Spencer Brickhouse, basically it's one pitch, if you think about it, was the only offense we had, a home run solo shot by Spencer Brickhouse. But I know there's a lot of people that are very upset. I'm very mad, obviously. I really thought we had a shot to beat Louisville and be competitive. And I thought it was going to be I thought we were going to win Friday and Saturday, two close games. We go to Omaha. I was like way wrong, but I really wanted to start things off, guys. With I was really impressed by I'm being sincere. It's not sarcasm when I say that I was really impressed by the coach of Louisville, Dan McDonough, what he had to say at the post game. Do you guys remember that? I sent you guys the remarks from our good friend Steven Igo, who had posted on Hoist of Colors.
Yeah, it was complimentary. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there, Dave. He was very complimentary of our program. Of course, him and I think him and Coach Godwin worked together at Ole Miss, I believe.
And, I think their time there actually, I don't think it overlapped,
okay,
but yeah, just missed each other.
Okay.
He was on the way out as Cliff was on the way in.
Gotcha. But anyway, it was complimentary. Of course, when you blow out a team, it's easy to do that. I hope it's a lot harder when they beat you. But he was complimentary, and so that was classic.
Well, Let me ask you a question. If and I agree with you on that, but if Elliot Avent had blown us out in the regional, do you think he would have been?
Oh no, no. He was a different thing. It's a rivalry. A better example would have probably been you want to use Louisville with Bobby Petrino or their former basketball Petrino.
Petino.
Petino, thank you.
Yeah,
Petino.
They're close.
Or Petrino. One of those Italians. Neither one of those would have been complimentary. Both of those would have been, just gloating in the win. So, no, I mean, it was a classy move on his part, and glad to see it. As far as the games, disappointing, to say the least. I think a lot of it had to do with mental and physical fatigue. NCAA did us no favors. First of all, by not giving us a national seed. Second of all, by, giving us the Friday, Saturday, Sunday regional, early start time on Friday. Our pitching staff was depleted. Not making excuses, but I do not think we were physically and mentally ready for those games. Louisville is not that much better than us. So it's a shame it happened like it did, but it is what it is. It's still a nice season, and we'll get to Omaha. I think a lot of people are obviously disappointed after losing the Supers. It just because it seems like we're never going to make our goal of getting to Omaha, but we'll get there.
Taking a look at the series, was I surprised that they won in two? No. Was I surprised that it's 26-1? Yes. I mean, I think pretty much anybody would say that. But at the same time, just kind of having glanced over their schedule and results prior to that Super Regional, you knew that they were capable of something like that. And seeing how they had come down to Raleigh and just blown out NC State in three games and put up a ton of runs in the process. So it was kind of the perfect storm. Like Kyle said, I definitely think we were mentally and physically exhausted. But that's no excuse. It's just reality. And I think it was the perfect storm in that you had that going on. You had Louisville playing probably about as well as they could play. And all of that factored into two beatdowns. I think if we played 10 times, they'd probably win 7 of them or something like that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bubba. I think you play those games under normal circumstances during the regular season, or let's just say maybe the damn thing started on Saturday. Agnos had another day of rest. Who knows what would have happened. Hindsight's 2020. Maybe we should have waited to throw Agnos Saturday. I don't know, but it kind of is what it is.
It's one of those.
I agree
things.
With you guys. I think the thing for me that concerns me is I was starting to think back to the fact that if you think about it, we were kind of screwed all the way when basically that first the wonderful weather again screwed us, because we have Friday, we don't even get to play a game. We finally get to play a game Saturday night. They were supposed to play it, Saturday? I think originally the game should have been at like 4 o'clock on the original schedule. And here we are not getting – we're playing Quinnipiac Saturday night instead of playing them Friday. And so you one day off. So everything was pushed back a day.
Right.
Like you said, Kyle, I'm not a guy for excuses. I know Cliff is not either. But at the same time, They did earn, I agree with him on, they didn't earn a national seed. I was disappointed we didn't get an 8 seed like we should. At least I thought we would be number 8. I really did. We should have been. But anyway, as the saying goes, it is what it is. It didn't happen. And then, you know, I don't know really, guys, who you could start on day one, because you want to get your best guy out there. The problem is that he had what? And then, you know, by the time
those guys, that's a good point. I mentioned starting Agnes on Saturday, but then who the hell would you have started Friday?
And then you have the fact that they didn't get home till early Tuesday morning. By the time they, I'm sure, left the ballpark, they had to leave for Louisville. Their travel day was Wednesday. They had basically 24 hours of turnaround time there from the time that they left Greenville. I'm sorry, they left the ballpark in Greenville at their home place after playing 4 games in 35 hours. Are you kidding me? I mean, that just it tires me to think about 4 games in 35 hours.
As far as the 4 games in 35 hours, I mean, that was an unfortunate reality because of the weather, and that was really nobody's fault. I guess you could have the NCAA could have allowed us to play that game instead of having that 3-hour gap where nobody was playing, and we're just looking at a field with no one playing with good weather before we got the game underway at 6 or shortly after 6. But
yeah, and outside of that,
it was just unfortunate circumstance.
Can I mention something too? The fact that it was funny to me, Kyle. You and I love weather. I don't think Bubba really cares. But I'm being a weather nerd. You're number one. I'm number two, and he's number three on the list as far as depth chart of loving the weather on the sports objective. But Kyle, did you notice how wasn't it ironic that in the regionals we couldn't move games around and all that, but they allowed Louisville the super regionals to move it up from 3 until 12 on Saturday?
Well,
I'm not.
I guess that was announced previously. And you have a different crew to work in each regional, so I mean, I don't know, dude. It's that kind of is what it is. I mean, I don't think that should affect the outcome any. But you know, there are plenty of things to complain about, and I think the complaints are we didn't get a national seed, and I think they need to have some thinking. And what super regionals are going to be played Saturday, Sunday, Monday versus Friday, Saturday, Sunday are probably already predetermined. But they need to think about it. They need to think, well, East Carolina played 2 on Monday. We need to push that regional back to Saturday for a start date.
They could have made it a Saturday, Sunday, Monday super regional. There's no question about it. They also could have let us play.
Well, that's what Carolina and Auburn had.
Yeah,
Carolina exactly. And Auburn has, you know, several. I think there's a couple like that.
Yeah, and I'm not a. I don't know about you guys. I mean,
oh yeah, there were 4 of them, because you have 4.
Yeah.
4 Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then 4 Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah,
and now some of it can kind of get lost in the shuffle, you know, based on whether it goes 3 games or not. But, yeah, that they set it up that way, obviously, for TV purposes.
Well, it's disappointing, but I will say this. The best way, going back to Dan McDonald was the coach of Louisville, the best way that we can – get to the level we are is by we've hosted 2. If you look at the, I want to make this point, and then we'll obviously get our guests online. But when you look at the situation, guys, look where we were. So 2016, we go to a super regional. We were not expecting to go to, and Travis Watkins hits that walk off in the 9th. We beat Virginia, and then it was William and Mary that next day, right? So then we go to Texas Tech twice. We're close to Omaha. And then you know how the disaster of 2017, 2018, we host a regional, but the weather got us, and UNCW ends up coming back in a bizarre fashion to that game last year, ending our season. So you look at the – to me, it's like a natural progression. You have 2016, you had the Supers that we were not even supposed to really be in. 2017, we thought that we'll be at least in a, hosting a regional, and it was a complete disaster of a season, a lot of injuries and whatever else. 2018, we have the weather delay that we host a regional, but we don't get it done like we thought. Now, this year, we start off with hosting the regional. We lose to Quinnipiac, but yet we turn go out of the winner's bracket, loser's bracket, rather. It just seems like that we're – it's like a, not as fast as we wanted to, but it just seems like there's a natural progression climbing the ladder.
Well, the problem, term, the problem with the fans is they're not just looking at Cliff's tenure. They're going all the way back to – hell, some all the way back to Coach O, but a lot of them are going all the way back to Coach LeClaire, and it's the hunger to get to the World Series. And that's what it is. That's where the disappointment comes. Look, what's going to happen? One of these days we'll get a chance to host a Super. But what's probably going to happen before then is we'll win a regional and we'll catch somebody at the right time. Yep. And we'll go win a Super and get to Omaha. It may happen next year. It may happen the year after that.
Well, you look, I
think, guys, this year you have two number three seeds, and then you have a number two seed in Omaha, and the number two seed's Auburn, and then Florida State and Michigan, who were two of the last four teams in, advanced, and then you had Duke, and that was a game away from advancing as a three seed. So,
right.
And back when in 2016, when we were 90 feet away from Omaha, we were a three seed. So, you know, a lot of times you hear people, we're 2 years away. That's not necessarily true. I mean, are there pieces that we need to add and things that we can do to improve our chances of making it? Sure there are. But can somebody just say that we can't make it Omaha next year? No, because we could very well make it Omaha next year.
Yeah, we're right there. The thing is that it's not –
We weren't ready in 16, and we damn near made it.
Yeah. And just like you said, Kyle, it was funny that McDonald, he's saying that if we can keep this coaching staff, that once we get to that pinnacle of going to Omaha, look out, so we're going to bust it out, and we'll go to several times to Omaha. And I think that's accurate. Like you were talking about, we finally do like Coastal. We finally get there and win the damn thing. So, I think that everybody has the right to be mad. The way that we temper our being mad and angry at things is not at the team, not at the coaching staff, but simply the show there up next year. A whole bunch of people buy season tickets. A whole bunch of people show up to games and be as loud as you can. That's the reason why we won that regional, is not only the talent we have, but those crowds were incredible. Don't you think, Bubba?
Oh, they most definitely were. The commentators on ESPN3 were talking about it. They were blown away with the purple gold cheers and everything that was present at that Greenville Regional. And I really think – I know Corey Glore, I think it was – I'm trying to remember exactly what the moment was, but he said, I think this is the loudest I've ever heard Clark LeClaire Stadium. It was in the championship game against Campbell when Brady Lloyd was at bat with the bases loaded, and there was a 3-2 count. And obviously, people wanting a base hit, ball four, and we got the ladder with ball four to walk in a run, and then we extended the lead from there.
Yeah, that was sweet. I think that's what it's just going to take. It's just going to take for the consistency of the fan base. I think the program is fine. I think that if you look at all the accomplishments, we'll save that for Corey in just a minute. But if you look at all the accomplishments of this team, I think it was Brady Lloyd who said, or it was Turner Brown, one of the two. When they came here, it was a good program. They leave it as a national program. It may have been Turner Brown. I can't remember, but I think that's well said. I think that when you look at Cliff, when he got here, was the program good? Yes. But now you're at a whole different level. And I think that's what I mentioned him a lot tonight. Louisville coach Dan McConnell was saying that we're going to have to take our lumps, and it hurts what happened this weekend. But at the same time, we've hosted two regionals. and it won't be long. And it could be next year. We're hoping it's a super, and we're hosting a super where the advantage will be for us. And there's something special. I'm going to say this, and we'll move on. There's something special about Burleson. I think we get to Omaha with a guy like Burleson. The guy did so much this year. He did all but carry the team on his back several times throughout the year. You look back at the UCLA series, we're so close to knocking them off. And congratulations to Eric Backage, by the way, Nick Stoppel. I'm going to be pulling for Michigan. I don't know about you guys in the College World Series, but those guys are, oh, my God, they were huge for our program. And just proud of what they're doing. And all the LeClaire coaching tree is tremendous. I felt bad for – it was kind of a bad situation. You feel bad because you love Bryant Ward at UCLA. So it's like either way, you've got, a pirate, so to speak, the former player in the College World Series as a coach. But they had a tremendous season at UCLA, and really proud of what he was able to accomplish and being the recruiting coordinator as well. But anyway, yeah. We'll keep our eyes out for the College World Series, and maybe, Bubba, we can get another national analyst to talk about that this week or coming up towards the end of the week. We'll do that. But
yeah, I was going to say, we'll try to do that. And just to expand on your point a little bit more as far as the evolution or what have you with our program, I mean, we've obviously been a very proud and rich tradition as a baseball program for quite some time, where we would be on the just outside the rankings or in the top 25 preseason. But you think about it, guys, over the last three preseasons, two out of the last three, we were projected, and we were projected by Baseball America and maybe D1 Baseball as one of eight teams for Omaha. So it has certainly gone to another level, and that starts with the caliber of recruiter that Nick Cliff Godwin and Jeff Palumbo, Dan Rozelle, and this staff are. They certainly bring in tremendous talent, as was reflected by us having seven guys drafted, three in the top seven rounds.
You know, I would expect Rozelle to get a head coaching opportunity at some point. I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet.
And Jeff Palumbo is right there as well. I've heard his name mentioned by people in the baseball circles. That don't be surprised if he gets some strong looks at some places, because
wonder if Wilmington would give him a look.
I believe Wilmington, that they're promoting longtime assistant Randy Hood to head coach.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they've already done that. But I may be mistaken.
But you're right, Kyle. When Kyle, you brought up the point several times about the basketball staff. If we can keep them together, well, if we can keep the football and baseball coaches together, oh my God.
Yeah, I agree with you. But if a guy has a chance to become a head coach at the D1 level, you want him to go do that.
No doubt.
Yeah. If you can keep him from leaving for another assistant job, absolutely. But, if Palumbo or Rozelle has a chance to be a head coach somewhere, then good luck to them.
No question about it. They've done a tremendous job, and there's a reason why. You could tell how great Coach Godwin is, because, Kyle, as you know, with football coaches, but it goes any coaching, any level. And, Bubba, you know this as well, that anytime you have a coach like Cliff, the level he is, he does expect a lot. You can tell he's really good to his coaches, getting them last year raises. He wouldn't have been able to keep them as long as he has if he was not doing well behind the scenes, treating them well, respect. I'm sure their input is huge for him, and I know he leans on them a lot. So,
It's obviously Cliff, or it is obvious, I should say, that it's not all about money with Cliff. Yes, he's gotten a substantial raise since he's been here, but at the same time, he turned down more than $800,000, I believe it was, at Alabama. And then probably $1 million+ at Mississippi State. So it's certainly not all about money, and he's come out and said that.
The Mississippi State guy that we had on said Cliff was never offered the job, so who knows?
I'll be honest with you, since we're talking about this. I think the reason I'll just be straight up. Alabama, they have a lot of money, but they don't have the tradition that you would expect. And, yes, he's good at building a program. But if he's going to go anywhere, I know you guys, we've talked about it off air. Somebody mentioned today on a solid voice, or I don't know when it was, but that he was going to Mississippi, that they're not happy with their coach. But I don't see that happening. But if he's going to a SEC school, he's going to go to one that's, I would say, probably like LSU or something like that. That's a big-time program that that he's already been at, that he can, he would have, if I'll just put it this way, I know why he's upset. And when he said poor little East Carolina, if that's LSU, if it's anybody in the Power Five, we would have had a national seed. If you take that resume and switch it with the SEC school, there's no question about it that we would have been a national seed. So he's going to go somewhere. He's going to go somewhere where there's definitely a tradition there, and that it would have to be something like that for him, more than just money. If it was just money, money is not. He's got to go somewhere where it makes sense for him to leave East Carolina.
Well, he ain't got 23 to Omaha yet, so
right,
the job ain't done yet.
And I think that's the ultimate thing. I think Cliff is a man of his word. I think he could leave tomorrow. I don't see that happening. I think that, and I think that he's happy here. I really think he's close to family. He's put so much time in the program that he wants to leave it where it's at. In other words, if he takes a program to Omaha and we didn't win it, then he says it a lot. He could sleep well at night knowing he took the program where it's never been before and where Coach LeClaire would have taken it if he has been healthy and still living today.
Yeah, I agree.
Very excited to have our next guest, unfortunately under these circumstances, but I guess the season came to a close a little bit sooner than we thought, but still a great season. Of course, let's bring in now the play-by-play voice of the ECU baseball team, the Pirates, Corey Glory. What's up, dude?
Hey there, gentlemen. How are we tonight?
Doing all right.
Good. Inquiring minds want to know, first of all, before we talk baseball, are you a horror fan? Do you like horror movies?
Yeah, I'm okay with them. Where is this heading? Yes. Yeah, I'm good with horror movies. Yeah.
All right. So we were talking off of, before we started the podcast, we got a debate on favorite.
Yeah, we were talking
characters.
About the new Child's Play movie coming out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a setup for a joke. We really were talking about that. And do you have like a favorite Halloween or horror character that you like, horror film?
Yeah, I will say I have a very, I can't explain my love and infatuation for the original Final Destination movie.
Wow, I haven't thought about that in a long time.
I hate all the sequels, but that one has stuck with me ever since I saw it. It's a rare movie I saw multiple times in a theater. That came out, goodness, 2001 maybe? I was barely in high school. For some reason, that movie, I don't know what it was. Maybe it's because it had deeper themes to it other than just killing off teenagers. It was more about fate and God and all this stuff. It went deeper than your normal horror flick.
It was about fate and God killing off teenagers.
Yeah, it's essentially that. and then the Rube Goldberg machines of finding ways to kill people. For some reason, I will always watch that movie if it's ever on. The sequels, you can forget about them for me. But that first one, that one's good stuff. Give me a Hitchcock movie, too. But for recent stuff, Final Destination takes the cake.
Who was the brunette in that movie? Is it Jordiana Brewster?
That was Allie Larder.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, Varsity Blues and that movie, and then she bounced around doing a bunch of other stuff, yeah.
Gotcha.
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought about that. I'm glad. I'll have to look that up. I haven't thought about that movie in years, so.
I'm here for the deep cuts here, guys.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, thank you very much for it. Let's talk about, speaking of cuts, so deep cut, talk baseball. Not the outcome we expected or thought, but I want to get your take before we go to the recap of the game. I was telling the fellas, we were talking about this before we brought you in here to this discussion for extra innings. I really loved what the coach, Dan McDonald, said after the post game. I thought that summed up the way that the right attitude to have if you're a Pirate fan and Pirate Nation. It obviously hurts really bad that we lost. We're not happy that we lost, but we're at a whole different level now that Coach Godwin's back coaching the team and hosting two regionals and all the accomplishments we've had over the last few years.
It's interesting. When I saw those comments initially, a lot of what he said I liked. That one didn't sit well with me. And to me, that I'm going to be careful with what I say here, but
okay,
that comment... No, you're fine. You're fine. I was expecting we were going to talk about that quote at some point.
What specifically was it? I didn't hear the quote, Corey.
It was in which he said, you know, when you're hosting back-to-back regionals and you reach this point, you know, a lot of times seasons like that, great seasons, will end in heartbreak in a super regional. And then he said, and the fans and the administration will have to understand that and get used to that. That struck me as I don't think he intended it to sound as condescending as I thought it sounded, because that flat out just ignores the fact that this program's been in 30 NCAA tournaments in its program history. And so that maybe it's the recency of it. And that whole weekend just went off the rails. But that particular line that you like, Dave, that one sat with me not too well. And you're not alone. A lot of people liked what he said, and a lot of the national media liked what he said. For me personally, and I may be in the minority here, but I'm only speaking for me when it comes to this. That did not sit well with me.
Yeah, I don't have to go back and listen to it, but I see what you're saying for sure, Corey.
I don't think he meant it that way. But I took that as, oh, these guys are new to this and they're going to have to get used to this. Well, that's not accurate. Like that's just not true. ECU is a power program in baseball, and they have not made it to Omaha in their time in the NCAA tournaments, but they are no strangers to this and no strangers to what happened over the weekend. So to say that struck me as a little bit tone deaf of the program that they were facing. And I know Dan McDonald's not, because he has ties to Cliff and to ECU with Roger Williams on his staff. So, I know he's not. And so I don't think that's how he meant it. That's how I felt it went. And to me, it still doesn't quite sit well.
The way I took it was the fact that your famous call in 2016, you have a walk-off home run. A team that probably shouldn't be in a super regional isn't a super regional. As we were just talking about, a third, three seed. We make it to Texas Tech. We're so close to Omaha. 2017 was disappointing. We don't even make a regional. And then you have last year with the weather fiasco that we had in Wilmington, playing against Wilmington. It just seems like there's a natural progression. I'm not trying to take up for him because...
Yeah, to simplify what you're saying, Dave, you took it as McDonald referring specifically to the Cliff Godwin era
Correct.
At ECU rather
Correct.
Than as a whole of ECU's lineage in baseball. And I can see both sides of it. I didn't hear the comment. I need to go back and listen to it.
Sorry to cut you off there, Kyle, but it felt like, and this was kind of a little bit of the feeling I got the entire weekend when we were there, even outside the ballpark, there was a lack of understanding about what the program was, how passionate people are in the program, how smart people are who are in the program and following the program, and how rich the history is of the program. It did not feel like that was understood by a lot of folks in Louisville while we were there. And that comment just kind of put a cherry on top for me personally.
I can tell you from past experiences, when their days in Conference USA, Louisville fans are assholes. If you're out there, Louisville fans, you're assholes. That's from back in the day when they were in the league.
And here's a fan base, Corey, by the way, that this is a fan base that said that the Kentucky-Louisville rivalry is bigger than Duke-North Carolina. I'm sorry, but anyway.
Well,
God,
I mean,
let's defend the Duke North Carolina rivalry.
We're just taking flamethrowers now. I won't go down that road with that particular discussion there.
I like the Ohio State Michigan rivalry better than both of them. But.
I mean, I'll say this, and I feel like a lot of what might be said here in our final chat, wrapping up baseball season, kind of like what Cliff said after the game Saturday, it's going to sound like sour grapes, but it's not. Louisville played their asses off, and they won, and they should have won with how they played over the weekend. There have been more hospitable places that we have gone with ECU baseball in the past. And so that's why that comment with Dan McDonald didn't quite feel right to me, because a lot of stuff happened that weekend that just didn't feel right.
Well, I don't know, Corey, if you were filled in on a little history lesson, but if you weren't, we'll give you a quick one. Back in the day, Conference USA, Louisville was a charter member.
Yeah.
East Carolina was trying like hell to get in as a football-only member of Conference USA. Guess who kept us out initially? Now, initially we did get in as football-only and then all sports. But initially it was the Louisville Cardinals.
That's right.
Their administration at the time that kept – they didn't want to be in the same conference with East Carolina.
That's
so
right.
There's a lot of history there. They ain't never liked us. They've always thought they were better than us. We didn't do anything to show them otherwise this weekend. They'll have their day, whether it be on the gridiron or on the baseball field. There's history there. There's a precedence already set for how Louisville feels about East Carolina.
And another thing, too, is that, you know, another way you can take it, too, is that guys like Alec Burleson, and the guys are sophomores now, and the guys are freshmen. It will be sophomores this coming year. We've got a lot of bright spots coming up, and I think they're going to be working their asses off even more. And I think that you're going to see a team that might be the best thing that could ever happen to us, is having people be condescending to us because we are Pirates. Look at the ACC. And the different people in North Carolina, they don't want us in the conference. They don't want us here on the island in Greenville.
Yeah, there could be a little bit something to that. I think the best thing could have happened was them somehow winning this super regional. But I know what you're saying. It's been kind of a little bit of the nature of the beast for a good portion of this season for these guys, feeling a little bit overlooked and not necessarily – condescended down to, like, again, this is me personally, and I don't want to
Corey,
speak for the program.
Happened, man.
There was very little a very little sense that we were welcomed. Like, I mean, there are little things that occur behind the scenes at every stop that we go to that are just kind of part of the business, part of the industry. And a lot of that just wasn't happening. And so it felt like we were off on our own. And if you're listening to the broadcast Friday, I mean, it was leaking in our damn radio booth all game right above us. And this was like an ACC press box. And that got me. Like, that just sent me off. Like, I don't know. Like, a guy walked in during our broadcast, looked at it, said, yeah, this happens from time to time, and then walked out. I mean, so it was leaking on Malcolm Gray for the entire broadcast. And it's stuff like that, you know, this will be where we stop this conversation, but there have been, there have been warmer welcomes that we have received as around the ECU baseball circuit than what we saw last week.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Malcolm said he didn't like it at all.
Well, that's what he said.
You know what? Hey, Corey, by the way, do you think that, two coaches get together, how cool would it be to have them non-conference in 2020?
I would be surprised. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Logistically, it'd have to be a weekend, or it'd have to be coming in for the Keith LeClaire.
We want to go back there, and I don't think they're going to come to Greenville.
I would be a little surprised if that was on the docket. Let me just put it that way.
Well, let's look at can we look at the season as a whole, talk a little bit of a recap of that, and then I wanted to talk about the future. The future is very bright for next season. talk a little bit about that, because I'm really proud of this team. And I told folks around town that were talking, and they were really upset. It's funny. I want to ask you, all three of you guys, have you today, the last 2 days, I've had people, I'll say something about the baseball team, and they go, well, I really didn't want to bring that up. It was almost like that somebody had passed away in my family, and they didn't know how to talk to me about it. And it was just really odd that the last 2 days at work, people have, they're like, I didn't want to bring that up. I'm sorry about your Pirates and stuff like that. And I was like, I think we had a great season. Yeah, this weekend didn't go the way we wanted to, but I felt like overall the season was not a disastrous season. Like, I'm sure maybe some people were not a lot.
Well, it's one of the best seasons in school history.
It tied the
1990 and 2001 seasons for the second most wins in school history with 47. You come into the season for the second time in 3 years, projected as one of eight to Omaha by Baseball America and or D1 Baseball. And so tremendously high expectations. And then you get off to an 8-5 start, not the end of the world by any means, but people that don't know that much about it, or even if they do know something about it, they're so passionate about the Pirates, and they allow that to get the best of them. And then from that point on, this team did exactly what they were expected to do. They just had to, in that first quarter of the season, take some time to figure themselves out.
And you had Packard and you had Brickhouse hurt at the same time, two of your best players. That I think Cliff had talked about that they hadn't been together, playing together, but a few games.
Corey, do you think this weekend, before we look back on the whole season, do you think this weekend, like I do, was a lot of mental and physical fatigue from the previous weekend where we spent so much trying to win that regional pitching rotation, getting kind of shuffled out of order and tired because of the way we had to play four games in 35 hours, and we just weren't mentally and physically ready for this weekend?
I think physically they were tired right off the shoot. That's what it felt like to me, even at practice Thursday. It felt a little bit like a half step slower physically. And then once they started trailing Friday early, particularly against Agnos, he doesn't give up an outing like he did on Friday. I think once that happened, then the mental fatigue kicked in pretty quick about we don't feel great physically, and now we're going to have to find a way to pick up our ace, which we really haven't had to do all season. And so it just compounded after that. And then Saturday, boy, I'm not sure what would have changed Saturday with Bobby Miller on the mound and how he was throwing. I mean, I talked to a few guys after the game, and they just flat out said we couldn't see what he was throwing to us. Like, they couldn't pick him up. And you add in they changed practice times on Thursday, and then the first game Friday, and then they moved the Saturday game up 3 hours, and it all just felt like for a team that was dead tired, they weren't going to catch a break, and they needed a lot of them with how things started unfolding. So, yes, I mean, to really drag out that answer, it felt like a tired team, like a flat-out tired, exhausted team. I didn't for one second feel like they played bad at all. Like, I thought they played fine, but they just couldn't come up with the big pitches. They were leaving pitches up, and early on in game one, when they had some opportunities to score early, they just couldn't quite put the bat on the ball. It felt like a team that was just – that was spent.
Not to get on a tangent, because we'll talk some more about some of the other regionals and what we have coming up in Omaha this coming weekend here in a few minutes, but since you brought up Bobby Miller, that's what he was right there, not far from a first no-hitter in super regional play, and then I guess what later on that night, you have Kumar Rocker from Vanderbilt. Yeah, he delivered that no-hitter and struck out 19 in the process. So went from not having one in over 20 years to nearly two in the same day.
Yeah, and I think there are very little happy results to take out of this past weekend if you're the Pirates, but I think the fact that they aren't in the history books is just a little bit of solace out of that. And as a freshman who was just able to go up there and just whack a base hit to right and end that thing. I saw a little bit of what Rocker was doing against Duke, and that was, I mean, that's one of the pitching performances of my life that I've seen.
Yeah,
like, that was bonkers. But yeah, I think I'm okay with ECU not being part of that history that Duke unfortunately was the same day.
Yeah, I was watching that on Saturday night, and I really thought that once they won that first game, even though Vandy's a huge team, huge program, I didn't see that. I don't know how many people did. I didn't see that no-hitter coming. I know he's a great pitcher, but I didn't see that coming.
No, I mean, I don't think anyone sees that coming, particularly against a pretty good lineup that Duke has, and they just banged out 18 runs the night before.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, baseball is a weird sport, and so sometimes you get the very unexpected, and that's what happened in that Nashville Super Regional. And when you lose like that, if you're Duke on game two, to even up that series, there's no coming back from that, and you saw that happen.
Yeah, that was disappointing. I know that Coach Pollard has I was telling the guys, I didn't realize I was wrong. I didn't realize that, obviously it was not in my lifetime, that Duke had was in a College World Series in 1961. But they haven't had anything to really cheer about lately. And he's done a nice job in Durham at Duke to take a program that was a joke, and having two Super Regionals back-to-back. That's just amazing what he's done there. What did Corey, were there some surprises for you? What about, while we're on it, how about Florida State with Mike Martin? A lot of analysts saying this could be the year that he finally wins. As he's retiring this year, this could be his year to win the College World Series.
I'll hold off on saying that. I think that they were, I won't say they were lucky to get through LSU. I will say LSU certainly gave an assist there in extra innings yesterday for not walking the best hitter in the bottom half of that inning and letting him walk off with a single to send them to the World Series. Yeah, I mean, there's a majesty element to Mike Martin going back to Omaha here, but of the teams that have made it, I would not put them at high on the list of teams that I think can make it through to win that. But it's a great story for the godfather of baseball to have one last crack here at the prize that's eluded him for his entire career. I just don't think that team has the horses to get it done.
Another story to talk about is what's going on with Michigan, another 3-seed, one of the last four into the tournament. And in a way that surprised me, given the season they had, but nonetheless, and they go through the Corvallis Regional and then go down to number one national seed UCLA, who is also coached by former Pirate and Bryant Ward, and third base and recruiting coordinator. But then you have Eric Backich and Nick Schnabel taking the Wolverines to Omaha for the first time since, was it like 84, 87, something like, 84.
Yeah, and it's a hell of a run, and I'm glad there will be a number 23 there in Omaha in some capacity there with Eric Backich. For me, I don't know what you say about UCLA. I mean we saw them in person, and so I'm slightly biased here, but that's the best team in the country, and this is yet another time in recent history where they've been the number one overall seed and haven't gotten out of their own super regional, and so that's a head scratcher to me because they had truly the makings to do it all, but Michigan is able to find a way through that one, and it's great for them and great for Coach Backich and Coach Schnabel to get there. But UCLA, I mean, boy, oh boy, that's the best team in the country, and that's another kind of down ending to a great run that they've had.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, not to lighten our losses, but imagine if we were the number one team overall, and
lost to a 3-seed at home. Oh my goodness!
Yeah, you see what I'm saying? I'm not saying that it doesn't hurt. I'm just saying that.
Yeah, I mean, what I said after Saturday, you know, and when we were wrapping up coverage, like I'm sure, like what you know, people around you, Dave, being very careful about talking to you about ECU baseball. Yeah, there are a lot of fans out there that are still upset and still bummed about what happened this weekend. I'm still bummed about what happened this weekend. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to feel that way.
I mean, that means you care.
Yeah, but what Kyle was talking about, what Bubba was talking about, that's what we'll remember here in whatever time you're ready to remember it. This was one unbelievable season, and it's raw how it ended. But we'll be able to step back and appreciate just how not just fun this year was, but how historic this year was in many respects, and just keep on pushing through because it came to a pretty sudden end over the weekend. But as time will move on, we'll step back and say, damn, what a year.
No, it doesn't change what we accomplished.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cliff Godwin, and Cliff, I think it was probably even before the flight home, he tweeted something that really summed it up well. I mean, he was talking about the 47 wins, winning an AAC record 20 games on something that had never been done.
A regular season.
I think, ironically, Louisville had won the most before when they were in the American, when they won 19. But then you have a super regional for only the fifth time in school history, and then hosting back-to-back regionals, seven players drafted, which was the most ever. Three of those coming in the top seven rounds, a school record 3.48 GPA, over 1,000 hours of community service. There's so much to be proud of, but it's one of those things that
to all Americans,
the raw emotion of getting beat 26-1 and dropping the super regional, once that subsides, people will realize how much we accomplished.
He loved this team. Like, he loved this group, and that's why he – not just that tweet to, really accentuate as much as you can in 140 characters what this team accomplished this year, but that's why he went to bat for them after the game Saturday in the post-game presser. I mean, he cherished this team. He knew this team was special and could do something like this and maybe even go further. And through various reasons, both something that they inflicted upon themselves in the regional weekend and other things that didn't quite go their way outside of what they were able to control. It just wasn't going to happen this time around. But he knew this team had the horses and the makeup and the mental capacity to make a deep run this year. And they did. They made a deep run. They were one of the final 16 teams left in baseball. We'll put this team on a mantle when all is said and done, because there have been very few teams that have done what this team was able to do this year.
And Corey, how do you?
Let me simplify. They're one of five teams that have been to the Super Regional in East Carolina history.
And you mentioned the conference, the record conference wins, hosting a regional, the fact that they threw a freaking perfect game this year. I mean, it was just little things like that aren't little. I mean, these are historic, iconic moments that this team was able to do this season. I mean, they played eight doubleheaders. They swept seven of them. Like, that's crazy. I mean, this team's a remarkable group.
And how about to me, the one that stands out the most is going back to the series with UCLA. We were really hurt about that series. We played them on their own field, played them, like you said, it was basically like five pitches that could have made the difference of winning the series or not. It's the only series we lost all year long in the regular season. I mean, that's just mind-boggling.
They lost two series all year. One was at the number one team in the nation, and one was in a super regional on the road. I mean, that was – think about that. That's bonkers. We'll realize that, and all of us will realize that. But if you want to take time to – still be upset about it, that's fine. Like, go ahead. Like, that's part of being a fan. That's part of being a member of this program and of this Pirate Nation.
Yep. So how do we – my ultimate question to you, because you're the baseball expert, how do we get to – how do we sustain – I guess the word sustain level that we're at right now so that we can go up to, where obviously it hurts the Super Regional, but we're expecting – Omaha. We expect Omaha every year, even though we haven't done that. But realistically, like going, we'll be back in Omaha next year. We'll be over and over again. Like, Super Regional will be more. I think it ultimately what hurts for me is just the way that I thought if we lost the Super Regional, it would be tight ball games, and it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
That's what hurts
for sure.
The most.
Yeah. Yeah, and that surprised me. But when you saw this team, and you guys were watching on TV, and you saw it, something just felt off about this whole weekend. And for a heck of a job by the Cardinals' offense. I mean, they weren't hitting the ball hard, but when they hit the ball, boy, do they find spots. Like, I mean, they were hitting through shifts, they were hitting down the lines. They were just dumping them into the outfield in front of the Pirate outfielders. I mean, they were putting the bat on the ball and hitting them where the Pirates weren't. And they just kind of slowly, surgically ended the Pirates season. I mean, that's approach at the plate that is getting lucky. That is a combination of it all. And it all broke for Louisville over the weekend. There's no question about it.
Kind of taking a look at some of the personnel matters and some of the storylines on that front. This year, obviously, the emergence, or not so much emergence, but Jake Agnew's really becoming so consistent in his performance and just really nailing down that command that he had struggled with so much in the past. And then you have Jake Agnew's setting the school win American Athletic Conference records for strikeouts. You obviously had, everything that Pack and Burley and Brick did. And Burley, he's someone after the season that he had last year, not a bad freshman year, but then he really started to swing the bat well in the Cal Ripken League. And boy, did that carry over to this year. And that's what leading the team in batting average, but then also the power numbers he put up. Last year, he only had 3 doubles and didn't hit a single home run and more than 115 at-bats, and then he does what he did this season.
He is, I'll put it down now, he will be your preseason conference player of the year in 2020. And, we'll see how next year unfolds. I mean, to watch him be able to manage everything that he has been asked to do in his sophomore year from the get-go. I mean, he was the Friday night starter to begin the year. I mean, and then his role kept fluctuating with bullpen work, outfield work, first base work, and sometimes he did it all in one game. I mean, and now he's going to go play in the Cape this summer. And
wow.
We know where the talent is in that league here in summer ball, and he belongs in that discussion. I mean, what he did this year was a revelation. And I remember talking to these coaches prior to his freshman year in 2018, and I remember Dan Rozelle, pitching coach, and Jeff Palumbo, hitting coach, offensive coordinator, recruiting coordinator, all of that jazz. They were both essentially fighting each other to try and get Alec Burleson to be with them. And then they found a way to make it work for both. And boy, did it work for both, because he's going to be possibly your Saturday guy next year, maybe even your Friday guy next year. He will be in the outfield. He has one of those corner outfield spots locked down when he's not pitching. He'll again play defense at first base, I would imagine, next year. And he's going to be the guy that's going to lead the team. I mean, it's a lot to put on his shoulders, but as we saw this year, he put a lot on his shoulders during his sophomore year, and he passed with flying colors.
What about as far as you're talking about pitching? Do you see, he's one of my favorites, so I'll mention him. I think he did a better job this year not overthrowing. Do you see Gavin Williams, do you see him going into a starting role, maybe a Sunday, or will he, I guess he already has had the shot at midweek. Maybe he would be the midweek guy next year?
I think he's got a real shot to be. I mean, and this is not knowing a ton specifically
right.
about the class coming in. And who might be stepping in, freshman or JUCO or otherwise. But I think we know he has the stuff with his two pitches to be really, really sharp. And one of the best things that came out of that regional weekend was the fact that Gavin went right up to Cliff Godwin before that championship game and said, "Give me the ball. Like, I'm starting." And that's something he doesn't do. He's not a very extroverted guy. And he went right up there and demanded the baseball from him. He's got the pedigree to be that. He's got the pedigree to be a really impressive weekend starting pitcher. I think the key for him will be, I mean, he has two pitches, really impressive fastball and now a really good slider. Can he keep honing those two, and is there a third offer that can maybe work in as well? He's not going to play any summer ball this year. He's going to stay in Greenville and kind of work out and do some conditioning work. And we'll see if maybe there's something that he can kind of work in, whether it's a changeup or a cut fastball, whatever the case might be. But we know he has the electricity, and he's got what it takes between his ears to be a really, really good weekend starting pitcher for this team.
It looks something like Ryder Giles is another one that comes to mind that he did very well this year as a freshman. Do you see him? Maybe he would get the. I know it's speculation. I know that, but is he a guy you could see doing a midweek starter?
The reason why I would be a little bit hesitant with Ryder as a midweek starter is I don't think his stuff translates to a starting pitcher because of the type of pitcher that he is, the side armor, soft
tosser.
And like once you get a second time through the order, teams start to pick up on stuff like that. But I think you're talking about a possible back end late game bullpen guy. Like what he kind of developed into a little bit sporadically this year. I think if he gets that arm strength up a little bit, which his arm got sore during the course of the season at times. He's a freshman, you anticipate that, but it knocked him off the mound for a while. I think if his arm strength can pick up a little bit, then you can easily see him as one of the back end of the bullpen options next year.
I think the Ryder Giles role is going to be, like you say, Corey, and for longtime Pirate fans that remember Drew Reynolds from late in the Billy Godwin era, Drew was our everyday second baseman. So Ryder is probably going to shift over
shortstop.
Third to shortstop, and then you could see him as that closer role, kind of like Drew Reynolds or just a spot role like Corey's saying, because if somebody sees him more than two or three innings, they're probably going to get to him.
Well, and I think the other key will be what the Pirates have in terms of infield depth and how they would want to utilize that. And if they could afford to put Ryder in an eighth or ninth inning when you might need him defensively as well at shortstop. So those are the questions that all hang over what this team will want to do with Ryder Giles. Well, I'll tell you what, he's a dark horse pick for next year as kind of a breakout candidate in his sophomore year. I know Turner loves the guy. Turner Brown loves the kid and loves what the potential he can be as a shortstop and something even better than what he was this year. And he was pretty dang good in his freshman year.
A couple other freshmen that really lived up to the hype and played prominent roles this season were Lane Hoover batting in the two hole and manning one of those spots in the outfield, and then also Thomas Francisco. We had heard about his swing and he delivered a solid freshman year, to say the least, batting almost .320 with four home runs, I think it was.
Yep. And I'll start with Thomas, because tip of the cap to him for breaking up the no hitter. But also I chatted a little bit with Spencer Brickhouse after the season ended Saturday, and he told me flat out, he's like, I think Thomas in his time here will be a better hitter than I was. And I asked him, and I asked him all around hitter. I mean, Spencer didn't get nearly enough credit for being an all around hitter. He got the power that's what he got the focus on. But we have seen some pretty raw and damaging power from Francisco this year. So that I could see, but I said, all-around hitter, you think Thomas could be better than you? And he said, absolutely. Like, he has something in the works there that you need to keep an eye on. And so that's what's going to be at first base next year. And then Lane Hoover, I mean, we saw the impact this year as to what he meant to this team in the lineup and also defensively. You can put him in the outfield spot, and he knows how to cover the ground, read the ball off the bat. And then what he was able to do in the two hole, the lineup, that was crucial to this team's offensive success. Lineup's going to look very different around him. And so how the Pirates want to slot him in, as long as everybody's healthy, that will be a pretty nice debate to have. But I think that's a pretty, multifaceted weapon you have there in Lane Hoover that really broke on the scene this year.
Ultimately, we lost, between drafting and graduation, 12 players. The good news is for the Pirate fans is this wasn't like a once in a while kind of team like we were talking about. You're alluding to, Corey, with the with our program. Do you see, is there a lot of guys, the freshmen that are coming in? I know there are people that want Steve and I go to put up baseball recruiting now because the program is such a level now. How do you feel about, do you know of, I know you don't follow recruiting as closely as some folks, but how do you feel about what's coming in next year? Do you know of maybe a pre-season look at next year?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't know a ton about the full class coming in. I can tell you that the coaching staff is pretty happy that all of them will be coming. There isn't a guy that was drafted that looks like he'll sign. And so they're going to have what looks like the full complement of this class coming in. And they lose a ton. You hit the nail on the head. But as we saw this year, some of the freshmen that came in that you maybe weren't anticipating contributing this year came up in massive spots and did it and sustained it during the course of the season. That is because this team knows what to recruit now. They know how to recruit, not just in North Carolina, which is where they get the bulk of their talent, but now they're spreading their wings out there. They've kind of gone back up to Virginia for a couple of guys, like what we saw this year, like Thomas Francisco is a Virginia kid. They know they're drafting kind of utility knives, and they're drafting guys that they feel are ready to contribute right off the bat. And so I'm not at all concerned about some of the voids they have to fill. And there are some big shoes these guys will have to fill. But this team has thrived on, over the last 2 years, players stepping in and just being themselves and not worrying about who they might be replacing, whether it's graduation or drafted or injury. They just go in there and do their job, and we've seen the results. We've had back-to-back years of pretty memorable stuff.
Boy, I know you said you don't know a ton about the incoming guys, but I know you have a guy like you have Barb coming back who's played a lot at third base and also a bit in the middle as well, especially second. And then you have Connor Norby. So do you have any idea who may be some of the guys that could push them? And obviously, Barb has been pretty good defensively, but then with the bat,
that's what
not as much.
I don't have a ton as to who might push them. I think you hit the nail initially about who will be in the starting infield next year, unless some of these new guys coming in kind of snatch some jobs away. But you're looking at Norby at second. You're probably looking at Barber at third. And Giles at short with Francisco at first. And then you got Cadell behind the plate. But again, I mean, a lot more people are well in tune with recruiting classes than I am. So I can't really dive into that.
What about a guy that we didn't see much of this year? Like, I know he came from the JUCO ranks, a guy like Christian Smallwood.
Yeah, I think there's a sneaky guy for next year. He had hip surgery, knocked him out for the whole year. We've seen some pretty decent power of stroke from him. And so him being positioned into a corner outfield next year wouldn't shock me in the least. It's a shame that half of his season was shelved due to a hip injury. I mean, he won a game for this team back against Marist this year. I think there's a kind of a breakout candidate guy to keep focused in on for 2020, but he's fully healthy now by and large. Like, he was walking around with a brace for a while. I'm not sure if he's one of the handful of guys that's playing summer ball. I don't believe he is. He's just going to work on rehabbing, getting stronger, and that's a pretty strong dude as is. And so there could be one of the guys to kind of fill the power void left by some of these big bats that are leaving.
Gotcha. Well, that makes sense. I honestly didn't. I didn't realize that as far as his injury, and I was wondering why. I figured it had to be something like that because I knew you'd played the key role early on, like you said, in that win early in the year.
Yeah, Corey, I wanted to ask you, I know that we've kept you on a long time, but do you have any plans now? Are you going on vacation? What do you do now that I know there's not really an off season as you work with Learfield IMG and other stuff. So what are you doing now after the baseball season's over?
I'm not leaving my apartment for the next 6 weeks. I'm just staying in here. I'm catching up on various Netflix and HBO shows. No, And
lots of Uber Eats.
A ton of Uber Eats. What a great invention that turned out to be. I can have Taco Bell delivered to my door. In a couple weeks, I'll be visited by my sister and my brother and my niece, and we are going to go to the Outer Banks for a few days and kind of reset the gears a little bit before they head back to Illinois, and then I'll be right back at it for fall here. So that's kind of on the slightly distant horizon is that.
What are you doing in the fall, Corey?
Fall, do a little production work for football season here on Learfield IMG College, and who knows what comes my way after that. But that's kind of my main gig.
Now, in the past, hadn't you been a studio host for the Florida Gators, maybe?
I was briefly for the Florida Gators during a basketball season. I spent a good amount of time with the TCU Horned Frogs for 4 years, and then I did a little bit of spot work here and there hosting in other places, but TCU was my main bag.
Okay. Well, it'll be, I'll tell you what, I want to thank you for all the, for those of us that have to work. We can't make every single home game, like, even though I'm a season ticket holder. I want to thank you personally for all the great calls, you and Coach O, and we thank the world of Malcolm, obviously, for all the hard work. I don't think people realize, I'll leave you with this, Corey, I don't think people realize all that goes on in a baseball program at the level we are, for all the people behind the scenes that don't get their names called out.
Yeah, I mean, there are – I always try to sign off years by highlighting those people that just don't – you don't know about, you don't see from, you don't hear from. This is a – there are a lot of wheels to this machine, and it's not just the guys you see on the field, but there are so many people behind them that are working with them to get them ready for games, to keep them focused in classrooms. This is a well-oiled machine that is put in place here for ECU. There are many reasons why this team is as successful as they are, and that's because mainly everyone who works with this program, everyone who's around this program, is bought into the program. And you see it. You see it come through, and that's why you wind up with a group that's not just – really good playing baseball, but also just really good. They're really good people. And that's a mission for this program, where when they walk out of here, whether they are drafted like so many guys were this year, or whether they're graduating like a good number of guys were this year, they're walking out better people, not just baseball players. And it's not just the coaching staff. It's the support staff. It's the strength staff. It is all the marketing people and all the behind-the-scenes work when you go to games, where you kind of take for granted everybody that's working over there. I mean, everyone knows what they're doing. And everyone's bought in. It's a great bunch to be around, and I am thrilled to be a small part of it.
And it looks like we're going to have I wish we could have a baseball banquet like at the Greenville Convention Center somewhere. We can have a few thousand people. It would be nice to help raise money for the program, but I know the program's growing. I know that it's going to be bigger and bigger each year, and very excited. I want everybody to buy. Let's sell out season tickets. That'll be awesome. We were number 18 in the country with, I think it was 1,800 season tickets. So any way that we can support the program before the season even starts will be tremendous. Corey, man, I appreciate you so much. We love having you on the season. I want to thank you for coming on the Sports Objective. I know you were tired a lot of times, and crazy travel, turbulence, a whole bunch of frequent flyer miles, but you still made time for us. That means a lot for me and all the guys.
Well, let me just say this to you three gentlemen. Thank you for having me on as much as you did. And you guys are doing something there that there is a desire for and a need for at ECU. And I don't think folks realize how much hustle you three put into doing this, and a special tip of the cap to Bubba, who's the one who kind of always reaches out to me, and I'm a little bit difficult to work with at times, so Bubba deals with that. You guys have something really good going here with this. Keep it going. I'll be listening throughout football, throughout basketball, and then hopefully I'll be talking to you again in 2020.
I appreciate it, Corey, and like I said, we'll definitely get up this summer and check out a Kannapolis Intimidators minor league game, and then
Crispies, yeah.
Yep, I'll take you up on that and make that happen, and then see that your desire to eat some bacon get satisfied.
That is a desire that will never die until I die.
All right, man. Hope you have a great summer, and we'll look forward to talking to you. Maybe we can get some fall reports from the baseball team coming up in a few months.
That'd be great, guys. Thanks for everything you do. You're awesome.
Thanks, Corey.
Thanks, man.
See you guys.
Appreciate you, buddy. All right.
See you.
Good night.
Good night.
All right. What a great voice. Man, I was hoping that we could hear that voice in Omaha, but I'm telling you, gentlemen, we will hear that voice in Omaha. It's not a matter of if, it's when. And just simply put, for me, I want to tip my hat to Cliff Godwin and everybody at the baseball program. I appreciate Malcolm Gray, everybody in sports information, all the coaches, players, staff. They mean the world to us. And I know there's a lot of people hurting right now in Pirate Nation, but the good news is, guys, we've got football coming up. Just around the corner, right?
Yeah. I want to, of course, so I think, like you said, Cliff and all the players and Corey and everybody for all the memories this year. But, yes, it's time to turn the page and start looking towards football, because it'll be here for long. Mike Houston's first year, a lot of excitement, a lot of things to look forward to. And, God, it's going to be good just to have a head coach again, an actual living, breathing head coach that knows how to coach football.
So I'm going to make a prediction right now. I'm going to make a prediction that on Pirate Radio, the very first game, that Kyle from McGrain will not be calling for the coach's head on the first game after NC State.
I will.
Is that fair?
Won't be.
You won't be.
Won't be? No. Anybody who thinks that I'm going to be calling for the coach's head yet and
that's
never has
Captain,
got
be Captain
never
Bill,
will
right?
get.
Captain
what Bill. What I was about, and the reason I'm saying those things is because they needed to be said. Well, don't confuse me with
Captain Bill.
Captain Bill, exactly.
he's going to take the negative fan. He's going to do his usual, the uniform sucked, or there's always some crazy thing he says. So at least you have logic behind what you were saying, and I really feel good.
Purpose,
right?
And believe me, what I said, and things I did, I helped get a lot of things going. I helped get a lot of people motivated, and
And by the way, guys, speaking of motivation, most of the time people may think this is our off season, but we've got a lot of cool stuff coming up, right, Bubba?
Yeah, we do. Like you said, football season is a little over 2.5 months away, but this time of the year, people are starved for football content, and so that's what we'll be catching up with a guy from a very popular website, Saturday Down South, and he also writes for Saturday Tradition, which covers the Big Ten. Obviously, Saturday Down South specializes in focuses on the SEC. So we'll catch up.
Sun Belt.
Yeah, but we'll catch up with him, and then we'll talk to a guy who Chris Phillips. He's the head of he operates the Spurs Up show, and
yep.
So he obviously focuses on the Gamecocks, but he's very in tune with what's going on throughout the SEC. So we'll catch up with both of those gentlemen later in the week, and so That's what they'll be fun talking some football, SEC and otherwise.
Practice starts less than 2 months, guys.
So, fall camp is coming up, and now they're in the summer workouts now and going to summer school.
Right.
And so make sure Pirates, make sure you go to class. They're doing that. And, gentlemen, I want to mention that we have, I found out that we've sold, some people may already know, but those that don't know, I found out the official word. We have 13,000 season tickets sold. I want to mention that before we get off the podcast, put it to bed. The goal was 17,000 in the Ward Building. I'm praying for that. That's a huge ceiling for us. That would be, if that happens, I'm not going to say it can't happen, but I think that's definitely a lofty goal. Definitely you want to have your goals lofty, but that's going to be, I think, a little bit. I think we finish, I know we were talking before the show, 15. I was saying 16 would be a lucky, I was saying 16 would be a lofty goal. So I think you guys, when you said 15 before we started the show, I think that's fair.
Yeah, we're at 13-9. We're going to finish 2,001 for season approaches. Right now, I think we're kind of in a dead period for season tickets.
Yeah.
They'll pick up again in August.
Right.
So
everybody's on summer vacation. They're spending their money on summer vacation
and
all this stuff.
You're either going to order them by priority deadline, or you're waiting until August. I mean, you're waiting until the
right.
season's going to start, one of the two.
Right.
You'll have a few oddballs to get them now, but it'll pick up again in August. I don't see us selling another 4,000 between now and the season. It'd be great if we do. I hope we do.
We'll take it. I'll take it, won't you?
Yeah,
I'll take 17. I'm not saying I won't
18,
take 17. I just don't think
but
it's going to happen.
No, I think we'll be between 14 and 15, which is step in the right direction. I think the home schedule is hurting us a little bit.
That hurts
us
a lot.
And some people still have their feelings hurt. They need to get over that now.
Yeah, we got the right coach in. Coaching
got the right coach. We got the right AD.
Yeah.
And, you know.
We got a new chancellor that I like a lot.
Correct. Yeah.
I would take the interim off. I don't know if they're ever going to do that, but I really like him.
Well, yeah, let's not rush things.
All right. Well, I like him. So far, so good.
So far, so good. So far, so good. But there's no need to rush things.
Yeah, so we've got a lot to be. By the way, folks, if you want to get your tickets, it's simply online, ecpirates.com, where you can order your season tickets the old-fashioned way, like I do, 1-800-DIAL-ECU. So please do that. Guys, I want to mention, too, I'm going to make it. Can I go ahead and make an announcement?
Sure.
Okay. I'll tell you one thing we're working on that I'm really proud of and something we're going to do next year, and I'm hoping that we can get Bubba involved. I don't know if we can or not. I think Kyle is in, but I don't think Bubba's in. We'll see. Working hard next year, guys, on doing a cruise out of Carnival Cruise Line going from Charleston to Bahamas. We're working on that behind the scenes right now. It'll be next July, working on the dates. It's going to happen. I'm just working on the itinerary right now, so I want to mention that, folks.
Yeah,
so,
well, when that's going to be a pirate themed cruise. Well,
pirate cruise,
not a pirate themed cruise. We're not taking it to the Carnival Cruise Line, but there'll be a block of rooms at a good price that you know we're going to try to get together and promote, and it'll be a pirate cruise. So make the plans now for next July.
It'll be
the
middle.
Ready.
It'll be the middle of July. I'm thinking. Well, but I don't want to give out the actual dates and the itinerary until my personal travel agent will be the travel agent of the podcast and the person you guys will deal with. We're very excited about that. She's very excited about it. We've got to I think we're going to have a huge interest. I know some of the former players have expressed interest in going, but you know how it is. Until they actually are going, we don't want to promote who's going and who's not going. So we won't speculate on that, but it's going to be a really nice thing next July.
Dave, that's one of those things, depending on how many people end up going, I could certainly see a purple gold cheer and some stuff like that taking place on the
God.
Ship.
I'm
so so
that.
either we'll have some new pirate fans or people will really be hating the pirates after those few days on the ship.
No doubt.
And Bobby, you know, you seem like you may be a little busy next July, but, you know, Stacy's lukewarm at best on the ECU athletics, and could be a way to get her behind the Pirates. Tell her you to go on a cruise to the Bahamas.
Y'all went on your honeymoon.
Lukewarm is I wish she was lukewarm.
Well, Kyle is such a kind. You're seeing this year the kinder, gentler Kyle. I'm telling you, it's gonna. People don't be disappointed this year because we're going to be winning games this year. And if I know Kyle before Scotty Montgomery area, that he was very complimentary of everything. So that's what you're going to see coming up. So don't be disappointed on Pirate Radio if you hear Kyle from LaGrange. And I mean, why in the world would you? This is what I was going to say.
There's always about Captain Bill.
No, that's what I was saying. That's what I'm saying. Like, when you have a situation where winning games and you're complaining, if we win the damn game, we won the game. I'm excited. I don't care if it's by 1 point or 50. And I know there's some games that we struggle against teams we shouldn't and all that, but we still got the win. An ugly win is still a win. And Bubba, you've coached track, you've coached a whole bunch of sports. If you win the fact you got a win, they're so hard to come by. A win is awesome. I don't like the term ugly win. I don't like that term.
Yeah, you hear coaches say it all the time. Whether you win 3-2 or 56-0 or 56-55, that's what wins are hard to get. And there's obviously always things to do better, but you need to appreciate them for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what, I appreciate the Pirates. I appreciate Ryan Robinson and John Gilbert. Thank you guys so much. There's so many people behind the scenes. I can't think of everybody's name, but the administration is so great. We had another From the Helm come out recently, and I'm just like going, it's nice to hear that Ryan, and he listens to the podcast. I'm not kissing his butt or anybody in the war building, but they've said it all along since they've been here since December. They're trying to be transparent, and thank God it was the anything that you do a 180 from the previous administration, you're going to be a huge, you're going to be a superhero compared to what we had before, right, Kyle?
Yeah, what we had before was a bunch of babbling idiots. So they weren't even babbling idiots; they didn't say anything.
They didn't talk.
You had Comfer and Vinegar and Montgomery. I mean, Jesus Christ, it don't take much to replace them. But it looks like we got some good people to replace them. So.
It sounds good. And by the way, guys, I want to remind folks about if you're looking for any kind of camps this summer for the coaches, take it from me, a guy who is waiting on Cliff Godwin's the very first session. It's sold out. So you can imagine, even though there are people disappointed about the season, there's a lot of people that are going to get a chance to have their kids play. And I know Coach Dooley this week has his first session going on. But go ahead and I know it's Cliff Godwin, baseballcamps.com, or Joe Dooley, basketballcamps.com. Those two in particular, and Mike Houston has some great camps going on for the kids, and all the sports have summer camps going on. So I want to mention that to folks. You better go ahead and get it, because I was shocked today to find out my plan of Alexander going to the first session is not going to happen. So it'll be, I think, the 12th of the – coming up July 12th is the next session for baseball, for example. So good luck to everybody there. And certainly the price is right and for people to get their kids involved. And I know, Bubba, I want to leave you guys with this. I know that we're talking to Trey Daly about it's funny how there's no off season anymore, but my son Alexander's at a basketball camp this week, and I know Riley, he does a lot. I know you have him do a lot. But this is when, if we want to win and you want your child to win and do well, this is when you do it, when they can go. Like, for example, Alexander went 9-4 today to basketball as a 6-year-old. He's loving every second of it.
Yeah, and they have to put in the work to get better. But and there has to be some balance to it. And remember, like when we had Trent Britt on, allow them to be a kid and make sure that as a parent you provide them with the opportunities to get better, but at the same time be reasonable and don't live your life vicariously through your child. Let them do what they enjoy and let them experience a lot of things.
That's right, and I know we've talked a lot, so Bubba, before we go, how can people find out about the podcast?
You can follow us on social media, on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, also on Instagram at The Sports Objective. Like and follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Our YouTube channel has really grown over the last month or so. We put all three of our live events that we've had at Professor O'Cool's over the last, I guess, 10 months or so. We have those on our YouTube channel now. And those interviews, while they've been or they were done a while ago, and they're ones that the content's obviously never gonna grow old, or evergreen, as we say, right, Dave?
That's right.
But and then you can listen to our show, obviously where you are right now, but also TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, Blog Talk Radio, iHeart Radio, you name it, you can probably find us there.
Just added last week on radio.com, so we're always adding different distribution places, and we're everywhere. You can listen to your favorite podcast. So, guys, do you have any final thoughts before we wrap this podcast up and put it to bed?
Oh, nobody's listening at this point, Dave. We've gone too long. I have nothing to say.
All right. What about you, Bubba?
I'm good. Looking forward to talking some football over the next couple months.
All right, guys. will enjoy. Appreciate Corey Glory very much for our final extra innings of the season. Hard to believe the baseball season's over, but it comes to an abrupt end. But we want to thank everybody again for listening to Extra Innings. You've been listening to it with from Kyle from LaGrange Barber, Bubba Rosenbaum. I'm Dave Richmond here on the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.